From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's our listener mail episode. We've got some doozies for you, fellow conspiracy realists, especially this week. We've got some troubling and some strange updates on feedback from our microplastics episode. That's the one where we pretty comprehensively ruined the concept of recycling, which was a conspiracy sold to everyone from the plastics industry. And we're also diving into a very, very strange, website that we were hip to by one of our fellow listeners. Matt, should we start there? With the very strange stuff and then get into the very disturbing stuff?
Yes, Ben. And to do it, we need to go to a message that was sent to us by Mental Biopsy. That is a moniker we will use for this person who sent us this image. It says, "Good evening. I've been listening for a couple of years now, and I appreciate it more than you know. A few years ago, a friend and I spent many hours deep in this website." And we'll tell you the website in a moment. "At first glance, it appears as rubbish. But once you learn how to navigate it, it goes into some deep places. Sometimes it feels like you shouldn't be looking at what it's presenting you with. There isn't anything here that can get you in trouble that we know. But initially, it appeared to be a dump for a hacker or something along those lines. You can begin by going to the address that we'll give you in a moment. Once you're there, you will always be presented with some sort of picture or a bunch of words. You can click on the pictures to advance to another page. The links are usually nothing that you'd typically get linked to, but they send you to places. Some of the pages appear to be just flashy colors or mixed up words, but a lot of the time this is masking layers and layers of stuff in one page. For example, you can sometimes click on the mouse and hold the mouse button and drag the mouse down the page and highlight stuff. You go to your notepad, paste it in. Now you've come up with what the flashy stuff was hiding." Oh, this sounds so amazing, doesn't it? "You can view the page as a source code and see more hidden stuff in it too. You can also use your phone and view it in simple mode, which removes the flashy images and it'll show even more stuff. This isn't limited to the home screen. This is screen after screen after screen."
Mm-hmm. We're talking about pages and pages and pages of text.
We'll read a little bit more of what Mental Biopsy sent us. But for now, let's give everyone a warning and then the website. So first, the warning is that the website we're gonna tell you about here has images that would be considered pornographic by some. It should not be visited by young people, and it should probably not be visited at work or even on a work machine, just in case.
Right. Unless you're us, in which case, this is like totally par for the course.
My search history sailed a long time ago.
My machine is now filled with this website and all its various, I don't know what you'd call them, tentacles.
Subsidiaries, tangents, projects.
You got to give it to us.
Here it is. So if you're interested, head on over to http://lhohq.info. Okay. Are you there? Hopefully you're not a child and you're not at work. Right. Let's go together. Everybody here is now on the website looking at it. I'm going to tell you just about what, about my explorations.
Sure.
Okay. To my mind, this is a repository of someone's, let's call them discoveries and artful presentation of those discoveries. Some of it feels a lot like a joke. There's a mock Department of Homeland Security seal that maybe you guys have already seen, which shockingly features a penis. But again, it's just a piece of art. If someone photoshopped this thing and it's just theirs presented to you. But if you click on it, you continue.
Right. I mean, and also, you know, about ballpark 50% of the human species shockingly features a penis. So
that's true.
I feel like we have to be careful not to be too puritanical, but you're right. This gets crazy very quickly.
Don't want to be puritanical, but again, like, who knows who's browsing it. So
I gotta say, though, it reminds me of like some of those weirdo kind of early flash art websites, kind of like from the early aughts. Exactly, where it's like, you know, a lot of like, what's that stuff called, ASCII art, you know, combined, you know, where it's the little symbols and things that are in alphanumeric key kind of sets, but also like kind of bad GIFs, but also like bad on purpose, where the edges are really, you know, kind of ragged and things like that. Like, but it's clearly a lot of thought and intention is going into the placement of things. But yeah, Matt, I mean, what's going on here? There's something at the heart of these weirdo artsy kind of presentations.
Well I don't know what's at the heart of it, but I'll tell you,
like, informational wise.
Yeah, I'll tell you a few other things that exist in the website that you can find. Some of it's harder to get to, and honestly, I couldn't tell you how I navigated to some of the things that I got to.
Right, by design.
But once you get there, it's like looking into, I don't know, a black hole, maybe. You start to think about yourself and the world a little differently. Maybe not that, maybe not that deep, but it's interesting. So some of the stuff that you'll find feels like maybe a hyperlinked conspiracy wall of sorts, where on the page there will be three or, you know, maybe seven things you can click on, but you really have to hunt within the website to find the things that you can click on. Almost like in the old flash pages where you could tab, you could hit tab and it would highlight all the things you could, you could select. It doesn't work that way, but you just have to search. And once you do it, you start jumping from, for instance, a write-up on a specific near-Earth object that may impact Earth at a certain time, that then jumps to a write-up on the Fermi paradox and gamma ray bursts and why perhaps we haven't seen any other intelligent life in the universe yet. And it just kind of goes down rabbit holes in that way. But then it'll take a massive left turn. Even if you're just clicking on whatever image is presented to you, it'll just take a left turn and now you're in military intelligence or something. But once you've kind of gotten used to the site itself and, you know, in your attempts to make sense of the fascinating layout, you'll find things like I did where you stumble upon a set of instructions for coffee. And it's all blown out. So if you imagine a user manual, you'd have all your information pretty densely in pages, you know, with a table of contents or something. Imagine taking all that information, then blowing it out with giant spaces in between with old icons from Microsoft XP. But again, just blown out. It's almost an endless scroll. Not quite endless, but it's a massive, massive page. And coffee, by the way, is Computer Online Forensic Evidence Extractor. That's what it stands for. It's software from Microsoft that does exactly what it says. It's a tool to extract forensic evidence from a computer. It's generally used by law enforcement. And it's the whole user manual just there on a website. How to do it, how to install it on a target computer, how to generate reports on what that computer is doing and has been doing, how to analyze all that stuff. It's fascinating. You keep going. Oh, by the way, the background of that particular page is an infinite GIF grid of Bill Gates being hit in the face with a pie as like a joke. So it's clearly to me someone curating some of this information and posting it, rather than, as some people have said, possibly an artificial intelligence program generating a website. I don't think that's a possibility. I could see it as like, here's a certain table of inputs. Now, whatever, you know, AI thing we've got running, maybe it then just puts things together that kind of makes sense, but not really. I could see that being a thing, but perhaps not.
Matt, yeah. I'm also like, are you getting different content when you like refresh the page? Because I'm getting four distinct article headings with the same kind of gobbledygook headlines and then some text. And then when you click the link to those articles, I'm getting the same main four pages. And what I've been doing is just doing select all and copying, and then it just grabs all of the text that's like sort of like a layer in the background that's obscured through all these flashing colors and GIFs and whatnot. And then when you paste that into like a notepad, it pastes everything. It even pastes some of the like hard coded like images. And it's like, it's immense. Some of them, like a couple of, one of them was maybe like, you know, a scroll. And then this other one that I've got, the headline is LHOHQ, Prepared Statement of Admiral Stanfield Turner, Director of Central Intelligence, is like, it looks like pasting a source code from a very large website. Like it's a lot of text. And then you even have a section that's like about advertising products. Yeah. If you go to products, there's all these video links that are basically just kind of like vaguely political art films. There's this one called The First Time Space Girl on the Farm, and it's 9 minutes, and it starts with a close up of like a donkey's butthole, basically, with like the tail kind of swishing back and forth, and it gradually pulls out until you see this farm, and then there's lambs, and then there's like these kind of looks to be like migrant workers and like a barn and this idyllic kind of almost ambient atmospheric music. I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but this looks like somebody's crazy art project from like college, or like, but with way more actual hidden depth of information. It's really cool find, man. Holy crap.
Yeah. Anytime you begin a shot with a close up of a donkey's anus and then you pull out, I mean, that's art, I think.
But that's why I said it was vaguely political, because it's like, does the donkey represent the Democrats?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where it's going with its politics. I would say it leans more towards, I don't know, anarchism, or, you know, F the system kind of vibe is what I'm
getting. Or the Church of the Subgenius. I have a lot of thoughts on this. This mental biopsy. Thank you so much for sending this. I don't want to put my thoughts on this. This was vaguely familiar to me from other weird rabbit holes, because I see a couple of possibilities here. First, I'd like to recommend, if you haven't watched it yet, there is a YouTube channel called Blame It on Jorge, if you guys have seen, that has a pretty comprehensive video on this website. So if we're being conspiratorial, if we're just taking at face value, Noel, as you said, and Matt, as you indicated, I think in your previous statements, clicking on the same, what appears to be the same link, will take you to different distinct pages. Additionally, I would recommend, again, if you're not a minor and you're not on a work computer with IT that checks your internet usage, I would recommend viewing Page Source. That will be pretty instructive. You'll see a lot of stuff in the meta that doesn't necessarily show on the screen for a page. Blame It on Jorge's ultimate conclusion is that this is an example of what's called modern Dadaism, because LHOHQ is very similar to LHOOQ. It's even quoted somewhere on the website. That's an acronym created by a guy named Marcel Duchamp, who's a conceptual artist. Who's like either, he's very closely associated with Dadaism.
He's the toilet guy, R. Mutt, like the art piece that's just a toilet signed R. Mutt. That was one of his most famous pieces, I believe.
And there are, there's this deluge of information, right? This haystack effect. Everything from what you said, Matt, to some science and speculation, to philosophy, to really ostensibly disturbing stuff about, say, fascism and Walt Disney, or, for instance, child abuse. And what a lot of people have argued in the past is that this is an ARG, some sort of augmented reality game. That's something that people asked us about Cicada, right? What was it? 3301? Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, Cicada 3301, sure. I mean, yeah, that's possible. I like some of those ideas, Ben, and I honestly haven't done a ton of research into what other other folks have been saying about it. I've really just let myself kind of experience it and go down the rabbit hole with it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it being a lot of those things, but the website always seems to show you something that doesn't fit any of the scenarios that have been put forth. Because for me, there's an agenda to it. And maybe the things that I'm about to say are throwing people off the scent of what it really is, or it's just an extra thing that exists there, or maybe somebody else applied it within, you know, the website by some surreptitious means. But I let me just tell you a couple other things that I found.
Sure.
One page is an entire operating manual for the Richmond Police Department's Mobile Command Center. And it is, that's information that a police department in Richmond, I'm assuming Richmond, Virginia, like uses to operate within the field, essentially, in their city when they need to have, you know, when they need to have an HQ, essentially, when there's something big occurring. And it could be dangerous having that information out there. I mean, maybe that's something that exists in other places where you could just download if you live in Richmond, or if you, you know, live in Virginia, or maybe if you just exist and have an internet connection. But it feels very strange to see it all written out there on this weird website. I don't know. That kind of thing gives me pause. Like, why would that be there?
Right.
And the other last thing that I'll say about it is that on one page, I'm going to make people find it. I'm not going to say what the actual URL is. It's within the website somewhere. And if you stumble upon it, you stumble upon it. But it looks to be instant checkmate pages. This is a piece of software that you can use. It is used by my team quite frequently when we are looking for interview subjects and trying to track people down to talk to about, let's say, a true crime story or something, and you need to get somebody's email or their phone number or know where they're located. It's used by journalists, mostly investigative journalists and private investigators and law enforcement, this kind of thing. That those are the people that use this. There are several images of results from Instant Checkmate of very powerful people. So this is a paid for service that you have to, you know, you have to pay to actually use it and search for people. And you have to pay extra to get certain levels of information. Whoever created these images has been paying for it and got a lot of people, like Steven Feinberg, Daniel Kowalski or Dan Kowalski, David Malpass, and even Peter Navarro, even the sitting president. It has personal contact information, like all that you could ever want on these people. I have not independently verified whether any of this information is correct or up to date or accurate in any way, but some of it appears to be. Some of the addresses are accurate for sure. So it is a really freaky thing to just see all of that. It feels like something you shouldn't be looking at. And I'm kind of scared that it's on my computer now.
Right.
Maybe you would be too, but I don't know. I don't know how you'd feel about it.
Or that it might look back at you, right? Like, is there some kind of ping? This may seem a bit paranoid, but is there some kind of ping sent that enrolls or enlists some sort of search set on your own information? I just hit you guys in our chat. This is something I found about, last night, yesterday sometime. Someone posted a map, a visual site map, that gives you a little bit of insight into the labyrinth here. And it is a labyrinth of sources. So,
oh my gosh.
What you'll see when you pull it up is something that each endpoint of the domain, meaning each thing you can click toward from the homepage, is represented by a dot of a different color. And being partially colorblind, I know some of it, but I don't know what it means. And if we describe it, it looks like there is a massive sort of circle or almost a torus around one link. And then there are some other things that link to things like you'll see how linking on something about a guy named Bill Howard Tannen will lead to something about Android Scientologists, which will lead to something about Governor Android governs androids. And this map, which you can find, you know, visual site mapper, this map just shows us, they have stuff about transcranial magnetic simulation.
Yeah.
One of my old hobby horses. This stuff shows you how they're linked in the titles of these endpoints, but content-wise, you'll see, again, to the point I think you guys earlier made, content-wise, you'll see that what's on the page or what's in the page source doesn't always match what the page is called.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, like, some of this stuff does appear to be, you know, copy pasta kind of, I guess, from official documents, like that are clearly reports and internal, you know, things like that that manual for the, you know, police equipment. But some of it is also just complete non sequitur weirdness. Like, there's one I just found from the sitemap that I couldn't even find through the actual front page, that the heading is devil worshiping pedophiles. Then the text is erections from because Microsoft, about for pornographic, with from for to because one Microsoft, from newspapers, one Wall Street Journal, with homosexual, and another Washington DC, on the one with.
Sounds like an automation of some sort of text generation.
Yep.
That kind of word salad seems common, but I think, you know, what I would love to hear, guys, I would love to hear from listeners who have gone with you, Matt, on this endeavor. I'd love to hear the specific favorite link they found.
Yeah.
I think that would be worthwhile. And then what it means. I don't think it's a cult. It feels very, very Church of the Subgenius to me.
Yeah.
As far as Marshall McLuhan, The Medium is the Massage, if you've ever read that book or that kind of commentary on how we encounter information.
So let us know. And if you can tell by my face, there is some flashing stuff happening on the website. And with that, we're going to head to a commercial. But thanks again for sending us down this rabbit hole. We looked forward to hearing your thoughts.
And we've returned. We have not returned alone. We are accompanied now in spirit and in motivation by several scientists who wish, for various very valid reasons, to remain anonymous. So our piece of listener mail, we just picked one from these, is one that I personally found haunting. I forwarded it to the group for visibility, just like as soon as we got it. In our episode on plastics and the great hoax of recycling plastics, we asked for subject matter experts to chime in and to answer some questions about how this current situation will unfold, what plastic alternatives might actually look like, how they would work, and so on. And one of the questions we asked is, how far away are we from a world in which human beings specifically are already born riddled with plastic, since it's in so many parts of the natural world now, even the few last pieces of wilderness left have plastic arriving there before humans arrive there. So this particular scientist, who, like the rest of those who wrote in, wants to remain anonymous, has first asked us to paraphrase their letter because due to the specifics of their work, they can't disclose very much personal information. So they say, hello, stuff they want you to know. Thanks for bringing us this episode in particular. Longtime listener, but first responder. I don't normally email podcast I'm listening to, but I noticed you ended this particular episode asking for any polymer scientist to comment, and I could not help myself. I am a polymer scientist working on interactions between polymers and biomolecules. And this person's department, their colleagues have started investigating methods into the detection of nanoplastics, which are smaller than microplastics, obviously. They said, we've recently published new work on detecting nanoplastic particles in this range, but I can't be more specific about it. because it could be traced to me or to my department. This is line stuck with me, guys. This anonymous scientist says, regarding the episode in general, I have good news and bad news. The good news is that I was very impressed with the episode. While I didn't necessarily learn anything new, you managed to really dilute the essence down to less than an hour without using difficult jargon or terms. I wish many of my colleagues had that same skill. Just going to pause for a second. This is us, not this anonymous scientist. Thank you. Thank you, Anonymous, because that makes our day. Whenever we have a subject matter expert come in and say that we didn't completely whiff on these very complex concepts. So they continue with the bad news, because obviously they're buttering us up, right? The bad news, says this scientist, is that you really hit the nail on the head, and we all probably should feel an imposing sense of dread. It is pretty much as dire a picture as you painted. As recent as last year, it was shown that there are detectable levels of microplastics in Arctic ice and snow. And you can safely assume that by now, plastic molecules are everywhere. No exception. And then they said, you've asked a few questions I'll try to answer. First question we asked, how will this unfold? You're a subject matter expert. You know plastics are a problem. What comes next? This scientist says, I think it is most realistic that we will do absolutely nothing about this for at least decades, as biodegradable but durable plastics slowly gain popularity but never surpass petrochemical plastics. For now, the official stance is plastics may be found everywhere but are harmless due to their inert nature. This is almost certainly not true. It is almost certain that plastic particles that have been found in individual human cells will have adverse effects on health. They're probably not clear now, but already existing, but will slowly become more evident in the coming decades. Scientist says, I have no idea how this will manifest exactly, but I suspect either an increase in cancer, always a safe bet with biology, as well as more generalized poor health symptoms, as polymer-biomaterial interaction is likely rather weak and lends itself to minor disturbances rather than very big, obvious disruptions of specific organs and tissues. What happens after that is anyone's guess. This is, in my opinion, far more a political capitalist issue than it is a scientific one. Goes on to compare it to global warming. And let's pause here for a second and unpack this. What do you all think? From what I'm hearing, the good news, bad news is that we were right. And if there's anything that we did wrong in this episode, we were perhaps a little too optimistic. This is clearly a scientist indicating a spike in cancer in the midterm and something that will be hard to attribute to nanoplastics in the beginning, right? Because that shout out to a specific organ, right? We can find some chemicals and contaminants that affect maybe the brain, right? Or the nervous system or the liver or the kidney. But this sounds like it's a general system attack. Matt, I know you were adventuring on this episode when Noel and I were doing this, but this is a problem that we've talked about at length in the past. Do you all think this person is being too dire, or do you think they're being alarmist? Or, I mean, what's your initial reaction to that? They're saying plastic will essentially cause cancer in massive amounts in like 20, 30 years.
Yeah. So I'm certainly not up to snuff on the research as I was gone when you guys did this, like you said, Ben, but over the years, we've been hipped to similar things. That's why you guys made that episode in the first place. It does feel like an inevitability. Like macroplastics, let's call them, are invading, you know, oceans and land and flora and fauna all over the entire planet right now. We talked about other chemicals that, you know, humans have found to be very useful for first, on almost always, military purposes, and then for some other purpose. I'm thinking of Teflon, things like that. The plastics feels like the same kind of problem. This is my question to you guys, and I guess not to our scientist friend as they have these answers, I'm sure, and it would be old hat, but nanoplastics, how are they generated? And I apologize for not knowing that and not listening to the episode, but are they generated through the process of recycling and other breaking down of plastic, or is it in the manufacturing or in some other way?
So nanoplastics can be manufactured, well, not manufactured, they can be created accidentally in the wild through the breakdown of plastics.
Right? Exactly.
Through the breakdown of plastics.
Okay, okay. Cool. So we're talking about all the plastic that we know is everywhere on the planet, and it's just breaking down, getting this stuff into water sources, then finding its way, you know, I'm assuming into the air and then coming down to other places, and then we're all just consuming it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a moment in the episode where I forget the exact figure, but it would be very common for you to go outside and be breathing in these particles pretty regularly to some degree. There would be some part of the air oxygen you are consuming that has residue of these particles or some amount of these particles. Certainly not an amount that would like affect you quickly. It would be a slow process, like feeding a rat saccharin, you know, and giving it cancer over a period of time. Or rather, I guess they fed the rats lots of saccharin to give them cancer quickly, but saccharin maybe only gives us cancer over the course of eating sweet and low for like an entire lifetime, theoretically. It's really fascinating. I've got a question for you, Matt. We did an episode just this last recording where we did the Strange News episode where you talked about this chitinous building material that would be used in space. It sounds like a really versatile material. How is that not being discussed as a replacement for plastics, since it's obviously biodegradable, since it's made of mainly organic material and seems like it's got a lot of potential, but certainly had never heard of that outside of this Wired article that seemed very pie in the sky about how this is the future of manufacturing on space. But the discussion of it being something we would use here on Earth was barely a footnote.
Yeah. I think we should consult the writing of our scientist here for answers to that question, because chitin would not function the way plastics can. And there's a very good reason why we use plastics. And again, our scientist has some of that info.
Plastics are just incredibly durable, and they're incredibly malleable, both as a material, but also malleable as an application, given that certain plastics will have a greater level of heat resistance and so on, or ductility as well. But I think one of the bigger issues here is what's called path dependence. We are path dependent as a species on petrol. We have an infrastructure that is 100% designed to rely on petrochemical plastics. So we would have to, it's not necessarily a matter of just inventing a viable plastic alternative. It's a matter of inventing a viable plastic alternative infrastructure to go along with it. Like, what use is building a hydrogen-powered car if you don't have hydrogen gas stations, for lack of a better phrase? That's the problem that we're at. And we know that any slowly degradable bioplastic is still streets ahead of a non-biodegradable petroplastic. I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to get fast food and look at a plastic fork and realize it'll be around thousands of years after I'm gone. I can't deal with that existential crisis. You know what I mean? It makes you think about the ephemeral nature of humanity. This letter goes on. Again, we were asked not to read it verbatim. I want to hit one last thing. What you, our anonymous friend, called a throwaway question. How far are we away from children being born with plastic in them, being inundated with plastic? Our scientist and other scientists who wrote in says, I 100% guarantee this is already happening, and then gives us two sources that they, you know, that are solid sources. They say they're pop science sources, but they're accurate. So the plastic is in you now. And if you have children, there's probably plastic in them because they are born inside a human who already probably has some form of plastic in them. And to your point, Noel, to answer your question about nanoplastic directly, Matt, it's a byproduct. like Noel said, it's not so much purposely made in a lab for practical application. Most times what we're talking about when we talk about nanoplastic are little bits produced by the degradation of, we'll just say macro to micro to nanoplastics. And that's when it gets light enough to go in the air. You breathe it in. What a wonderful day. 35 years later, some reason you have cancer. That's the dystopian view. But yeah, that's
my son develops cancer 30 years down the road because of this. That's a horrifying thought.
It all points to the short-sightedness of technology and manufacturing, right? Like, only now are we kind of discussing that maybe cell phones possibly maybe give you cancer or contribute to it. But it's not like we're slowing down. That, like you would say, Ben, that badger's already out of the bag. And same with plastics. I mean, even in the episode, we talked about how it was pretty clear very quickly that this was going to be a problem, but the convenience and the money to be made outweighed worrying about the ultimate outcome for the future. And that's just a trend we see, especially in the United States, you know, in terms of just like putting the moment ahead of like the big picture and how things will affect, you know, everyone down the line, not just you know, those in a position to profit. It's sad, and it's I think this is a really great example, because even this isn't a conversation we're hearing in the halls of Congress. This isn't a conversation we're hearing in presidential debates. How do we deal with the plastic problem? But it's a problem. There's no question about it.
Yeah. I still have a bias going into this because I believe the petrochemical industry has been aware of this, just like they were aware of climate change for a very long time, and have perhaps even orchestrated, which I know is a dangerous word, but perhaps even orchestrated path dependency upon plastic as an insurance policy, a new potential income stream, a revenue stream for the post-fossil fuel era, right? Like it's kind of like how R.J. Reynolds got big into vapes, you know, because cigarettes are on the way out. So maybe we can find another way to sell our base product, which is tobacco. So can we find another way to sell our base product, oil and fossil fuel? Yeah, plastic bags. A fork that will be here like the statue of Ozymandias long after we are gone.
A fork you didn't even ask for in your bag of fast food. You know what I mean? Like, I save that stuff because it feels like the right thing to do or some way of, and I rewash my Tupperware that comes in like to-go food. I keep that stuff and I rewash it and try my best to use it until it sort of is full of holes and useless.
Well, it degrades directly into your mouth.
You're probably right, Matt. I'm probably a freaking idiot, but I just don't know.
Just don't microwave it.
No, I certainly don't. But okay. All those plastic scientists are out there right now saying, Noel, no, do not do that. Stop. Stop.
As Matt refills his water bottle.
That's right.
And I would say thank you to the anonymous scientists, because you have been shouting politely at me for years, whenever this comes up, even back in the YouTube days. And I greatly appreciate this. In the letter, you know, again, we've been asked not to read it in full, but in the letter, you anonymous scientists make a fantastic point where you say, you know, a lot of research scientists are underpaid. They have the same problems that so many people have today, skyrocketing cost of living or rent, you know, insecurity about continual employment. Speaking out can have repercussions. It sounds like a conspiracy theory, but the apparatus of academia can and will, you know, exert influence on divergent opinions or unpleasant truths. So keep fighting the good fight. Write to us. Let us know. I've got a couple of contacts for people who have had personal experience trying to go completely plastic free, and I'm going to be hopping on to talk with them at length. And Matt, Noel, I'd love to either get you guys on there with me or to update you afterwards, because it's just, if you try going just a month without getting new plastic, forget not ever using plastic. That's really tough now. But if you try going a month just not getting any plastic from the grocery store, from a restaurant, from, you know, the auto mechanic, whatever, then it's a very daunting thing. And it's a great illustration of just how far down this road we as a civilization have gone. But hopefully this episode isn't all gloom and doom. We've been doing something that I don't know about you guys, but I quite like, where we try to find something that's maybe a little bit lighter to end the show, so it's not all we're gonna die riddled with plastic, doxed by some strange, mad, possibly artificial intelligence created website. So we're gonna pause.
So we're gonna talk about the first presidential debate of 2020.
Hee hee.
And we'll do that during a break, so that you don't have to hear three more dudes hot takes. And after that break, we'll be back with another strange, hopefully not as terrifying, story about plastics.
And we're back. And as promised, we do have another plastic story coming from a listener named Steve. But also, as promised, it is a little bit more of a kind of a lighthearted, silver lining-esque story. Maybe not. We'll let you be the judge. So Steve wrote us and commented on how in the plastics episode, we also tried to end that one on a somewhat positive note, talking about how the Lego Corporation, the giant Danish company that makes those colored bricks that you're always stepping on with your bare feet, nasty little things, but you know, when you put them together, you make all kinds of cool stuff. Adults and children alike love them. A lot of adults really love Legos, nerd out and make like Ghostbusters, you know, headquarters and like the Death Star, things that kids would never in a million years be able to afford or likely have the attention span to do.
Be careful what you say about Legos. You got two other guys in this meeting that are big fans.
Oh, I love Legos. No, I love Legos. I just don't like stepping on them. I really do love Legos. They're a lot of fun. They're a good way to teach spatial recognition for kids and the idea of of engineering and an appreciation for, you know, architecture and structural stuff and all of that. It's great. It's a really cool company and a really interesting legacy to that. The company that makes them. But they have decided to pivot to, as you know, when you buy a Lego kit, it comes in a giant plastic bag or a series of plastic bags, depending on which pieces they might be organized, you know, in like pieces that would be in an individual bags. And because Lego Corporation received a bunch of letters from children who were concerned about climate change and about the effects of plastics on the environment, they decided, okay, we're going to listen to these children and we're going to pivot. And we're going to start using paper bags as opposed to plastic. But of course, the Legos themselves, still made out of plastic. And we mentioned on the show, this is what Steve was commenting on, that, at least they don't end up in the ocean, you know, because kids presumably keep their Legos around and you know, display them on their mantles. And then maybe they get broken down and put in bags and passed down to, you know, siblings or whatnot, because Legos are expensive. he said, ironically, just that very thing happened one particular time in the 90s, a container ship. BBC sent the link to this article from the BBC talking about how a container ship filled with millions of Lego pieces was capsized off of Cornwall in the United Kingdom in 1997. It was hit by this massive wave and it dumped hundreds of thousands, I think over a million Lego pieces into the ocean. And consequently, these pieces have been washing up on the beaches of Cornwall ever since.
Yeah, it was 4.8 million pieces estimated in a container ship going to New York.
Interestingly enough, a lot of them were under the sea themed. So it's become kind of a little like, you know, apparently back in the 90s, there'd be kids that would set up on the beaches or on the boardwalks selling these things that they had collected, like shells, you know, but it's literally these little plastic pieces. And there'd be little games you'd play with your neighbors or people in the village. Because Cornwall is a very small, it's a village, more or less. It's a very small place. one of my favorite electronic artists, Richard James, aka Aphex Twin, grew up in Cornwall, and he talks about it a lot as just being this very, very sleepy little tiny kind of seaside town. But yeah, there was a access to the manifest from this shipping container and the breakdown of all the different pieces that were on it. And I think one of the figures was 353,264 plastic daisies fell into the sea. And this was on 13th of February, 1997. And the container ship was the Tokyo Express.
And there were 62 containers overall lost overboard, right?
That's
not just the one container.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Of course. That's because, you know, let's think of the way these ships work. These are stacked. But the one that made the news because it's continued to have an impact over years was the Lego one, because they just keep kind of washing up on the shore. And it's become like a thing that the residents start to have become familiar with. And it's, the story isn't like a negative story. The people that they interviewed from the village were more like, oh, this is like, it's like a treasure hunt. Like, oh, you found an octopus? Well, I found a green dragon, or a little tiny sword, a pirate sword or whatever, you know?
Yeah, but there is a very negative side to this story, right? We're talking about plastics and pollution, especially in the ocean. And we're talking about millions of Legos that fell to the ocean floor from that container. It was somehow released. And I guess just over time, these things started coming up, and that's just plastics that animals are going to be, you know, eating. Probably some of them are, a lot of them are small enough to be eaten.
Yeah. And then consider that, again, the reason I wanted to emphasize the multiple container aspect here is because these containers are going to be degrading probably varying rates. So Legos, we know that the container holding the Legos was breached, but there may be other stuff coming and stuff that doesn't contain things as small and light as Legos. So it's not as easily transported to the shore. But I do want to add some hope here. One thing that is inspiring about this is the community's reaction. As I think you're getting at there, Noel, there's a Facebook page called Lego Lost at Sea, organized by a resident called Tracy Williams. And this is entirely a community of people who have gamified collecting these Legos. So they've gamified cleaning up at least the shoreline. And, you know, you want to collect your daisies. What else we got? We got the flippers, the pirate swords, the harpoons. As you said, Noel, it's oddly enough pretty nautical themed.
It's a pretty wide swath of stuff. So there's a great breakdown on this BBC article that goes into even the specific numbers. There's spear guns, presumably belonging to a tiny Lego deep sea diver, 13,000 of those. The black octopus, one of the rarest items in this haul, because there are only 4,200 of them. So like we were saying, this has definitely become like this gamified thing where people will find these. It's almost like finding a rare Pokemon or something like that. Yellow life preservers, we got 26,600 of those. Little tiny flippers in pairs, black, blue, and red, 418,000 of those. The green and the black dragons, also among the rarer items, 33,941. A brown ship rigging net, 26,400 of those. We mentioned the nearly 500,000 daisies in pairs of four, white, red, and yellow. Scuba devices, scuba breathing apparatuses, about 100,000 of those. And that's it. Total of 4,756,940 Lego pieces that were in this single container. And the estimate is that 3,178,807 might have been light enough to have floated. And let's also mention, too, the great voyage that these little guys have made. We're talking about 62,000 miles that some of these pieces might have drifted. And this article in BBC mentions that it's 24,000 miles around the equator, meaning that they could potentially end up on any beach on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're all interlinked. This reminds me of the fantastic story of the rubber ducks, which are sometimes called the friendly floaties. Heard of this, perhaps. I know you've heard of it, Matt. A guy named Curtis Ebesmeyer is an oceanographer who studies ocean currents based on the directions that flotsam, floating sea debris, takes. And he was able to use rubber ducks. Now, before you think I'm painting this wonderful guy as a villain, I want you to know he didn't throw all these ducks in the ocean. On January 10th, 1992, 12 40-foot intermodal containers. Those are those shipping containers we're talking about. That's what you see on a train sometimes if you live near train tracks.
Or a semi-trailer.
12 of these 40-foot containers were washed overboard. One of them held almost 29,000 children's bath toys. So yellow ducks, blue turtles, green frogs, red beavers. And these things float because if you're a rubber duck, to you, the ocean is just a really big bathtub. And these things, as they floated around, you know, they're small. It's tough for people to catch all of them, even if you were worried about fighting pollution, or even if those shipping interests were legally liable for the environmental damage. So instead, what we had was kind of these maritime tracer bullets that allowed us to see the paths this flotsam was taking. And it told us a lot about the function and the interaction of Earth's ocean currents. So there's something to be said there. You know, there's a little bit of good we can take with the bad. And the Legos are going to, I think, are very similar in perhaps more, not even a microcosmic way, because as you said, they could end up at any beach on the planet. I always thought the message in the bottle thing was largely an artifice or a trope used in fiction. But if you throw a bottle in the right place in the ocean, even from the shore, then who knows where it'll end up.
Right.
True.
Just to end it on the shipping containers thing, Ben, I just wanted to hit you with a stat on, at least from 2014, of global annual shipping container losses. And within that BBC article, it states that somewhere between 700, 600 containers go missing or are lost at sea every year. That was between 2008 and 2010. And then from 2011 to 2013, approximately 2,700 containers were lost on a yearly basis. So just think about to your point, Ben, about how many things are down at the bottom of the ocean in these containers that are degrading and just ready to release something.
Mm-hmm. And so, thank you, Steve, for providing us with a little bit of a lighthearted look at this ongoing strange story of things lost in the ocean and returning to us. Some of the authors writing about this and journalists have waxed poetic because how could you not? Thank you also to our anonymous scientists who have written in to give us a behind-the-scenes look at the growing threat of nanoplastics. And thank you to Mental Biopsy for introducing many of our fellow listeners to their next favorite internet rabbit hole. Step to one side, Time Cube. There's a new weird one in town. Thanks also, by the way, to Alessandra S., who went onto our Facebook page, here's where it gets crazy, and said, "Why won't the skeleton watch the scary movie?" He doesn't have the guts. So thank you, Alessandra. You're in. If you want to join up and hang out with our favorite part of the show, our fellow listeners, then do head over to Facebook, to the Instagrams, to the Twitters. We try to be easy to find. We love to recommend Here's Where It Gets Crazy. All you have to do is mention one of our hosts, all of our hosts, one of our super producers like Codename Doc Holliday or Mission Control, or frankly, hit us with a pun, make us laugh, something that lets us know you listen to the show. But what if you don't like social media? What if you heard the big data and the Facebook episodes? Well, there's another way you can contact us. You can call us directly. We went and got our own phone number.
That's right. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Call now, leave a message. You can call anytime. It's not going to disturb anyone. It goes to a voicemail service. You'll hear Ben. When he's done, leave that message. We want to hear anything you have to say. You might end up on the show. Please let us know if you're okay with that and if you don't mind us using your first name. Other than that, whatever you want to say.
And also, while you're at it, while you're messing around on the internet or making phone calls or doing what have you, why not go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it's now called, and leave us a nice review. It helps people target in on cool episodes they might be into or just discover the show. It really does kind of boost that algorithm a little bit. And especially now that we're kind of in a new way of doing things here, stuff they don't want you to know, we'd love to hear your feedback, especially if it's good. Mainly, sure. If it's good.
Well, yeah, and don't forget to head on over to youtube.com/conspiracy stuff. Make sure you're subscribed. Check us out there. We're doing this on camera right now if you're just listening to it, and you may see part of this on our YouTube channel if you wish to see our faces, and we hope you do. But if you don't want to do that, you can always contact us the good old-fashioned way. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.